Hello, America. This is the place for uncensored talk on everything that divides us as a nation. I'm Alan Jacoby, and welcome to The Great Divide. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Great Divide podcast. I'm your host, Alan Jacoby. Hope you're all doing well. With me today, I have a special guest, Alex Abernathy. Alex is a radio news anchor in Knoxville, Tennessee, who reports the top of the hour local news for what was once the Rush Limbaugh show, God rest that legend's soul, and now for the new Dan Bongino show, who launched today, who has the honor of taking Rush Limbaugh's time slot on talk radio. But we know Dan Bongino will never replace Rush. It's an honor for him to fill that slot. Alex also has a conservative podcast called Combating the Madness. That's where I came to find Alex. Alex, thanks for being here. How are you?
What's up, Alan? I'm good. You talk about Rush Limbaugh, the great one. The name of my show, Combating the Madness, actually came from a spot that we used to run on our station for the Rush Limbaugh show, where we'd have the voiceover guy come in and he would play a little clip from Rush Limbaugh and he'd say, Rush Limbaugh, combating the liberal madness daily. And then it would go back to Rush and then we would go back to a commercial and then back to Rush's show. And so I heard that phrase and I was like, I got to use that. I have to use that phrase.
Yeah, I love that's awesome, and it's a great name for the show, because I feel like being conservatives talking about the radical left progressives, that's all we do. It's like it's what it is. It's combating the madness. That's when I was coming up with a name for my podcast. I didn't come up with the name, actually. A friend of mine is a police officer who finally pushed me over the edge to get me to start the podcast. Said, you know, I like to talk about everything that divides us as Americans. You know, the left is, in my opinion, ripping this country apart. So he came up with this, is you should do this podcast and call it The Great Divide. And, you know, I wasn't sure at first, but then it just stuck and kept coming back. And I'm like, yeah, because we're in this great divide, I think.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up with my name, you know?
Well, and I love the way you've branded it. Like, your Facebook header and whatnot has half of the page red, half of the page blue. It's branded perfectly.
Right. You know, I mean, I'm all red through and through, but you know, it doesn't mean there aren't any Republicans, in my opinion, that are exempt from the abuse I also give to the left.
Completely,
you know?
Agree.
So, being obviously we're both conservatives, you are a professional talk radio anchor, and I know that you know, with Rush Limbaugh being conservative, Dan Bongino, your radio station itself has some background with, you were an affiliate, your station was affiliate of CNN at one point, correct?
Yes. So the way radio is weird in that we are a Cumulus station. So we're owned by Cumulus Media, and Cumulus Media also owns Westwood One. And so Westwood One was the oversight group basically for CNN. So whenever I do a top of the hour newscast, I will come on the air. I'll do probably half of my newscast is local news, which I'm harvesting and writing and reporting on my own. But then for the national news segment, basically what happens is from up the ladder, I will get stuff sent down to me, and then I can pick and choose from that what I want to put in the newscast. So for years, this station, because of Cumulus, Westwood One, and CNN, all those national hits would come from CNN. So whenever I would go to the White House, I'd be going to Caitlin Collins of CNN, or if I'd go to a big story like George Floyd last summer, I was going to Omar Jimenez in Minneapolis. And so it was brutal going from the Rush Limbaugh show and then going to a newscast and sending it to a CNN reporter to talk about it. And then, of course, then the backlash comes from our audience onto me saying, oh, you're top of the hour newscaster. He's just another member of the liberal media, this, that, and the other. And I just have to sit there and just wear it. And we recently, when I say recently, probably 6 months ago, made the switch over to becoming a Fox News affiliate because the Westwood One radio branch essentially was a victim of COVID. So it died. We got out of that. And now we get to be a Fox affiliated station, which has just made my life so much easier.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's a little better. I mean, so, you know, since the election, people, you know, shit on Fox here and there. I love Hannity. I love Tucker, you know, Ingram Angle, all that. And you know, they have some They Fox has their own issues, but I mean, anything's better than the Communist News Network. It's, you got to be happy to be away from them and have to deal with that nonsense, you know?
Yeah, kind of what I've learned from being in the mix of both CNN and Fox at one point in time is neither is really what everybody thinks they are. I mean, at the end of the day, Fox is on the right, CNN is on the left. But if you are on the right, you tend to think that CNN is vastly overwhelmingly leftist. CNN is left. They are not overwhelmingly leftist. Just like those on the left think Fox is vastly overwhelmingly right. In reality, Fox is to the right. But at the same time, if you're on the right, you think Fox is more centrist. If you're on the left, you think CNN is more centrist. Those are both wrong, too. It is very quite as simple as Fox is right, CNN is left. And there's no more, no less to it.
Yeah, it's you're right. You put it perfectly. And it's everyone who hates CNN thinks they are. Even me, I have my moments where they're extreme left. But hearing it from someone who's in the business every day like you and knowing, you know, obviously, you know, that they're there's a difference. You have your Don Lemons and then you have, you know, everyone else. And he's a whole other story. I could talk about him for hours. Oh.
Yeah, I could sit here and I could rip the Cuomo story going on with CNN right now. I could rip Don Lemon. I definitely have my flaws with CNN. But at the end of the day, when they're sending me news clips, I'm getting the awful reporters at some times. But at other times I would get, say, when Trump was in office, President Donald Trump today spoke at the White House and touted the success of Operation Warp Speed. And then I play a clip of Donald Trump touting his own success with Operation Warp Speed. Well, if you ask somebody on the right who never watches CNN, they would sit there and say, well, CNN would never do that. They would never dare do that. So, like I said, they're not as far left, just like Fox News is not as far right as people think.
Absolutely. I agree. I watch CNN also. I want to hear. I watch some, you know, left and extreme left news outlets, just like I watch right and some extreme right news outlets. I want to hear it all. So, you know, obviously it helps for content and just to know the differences and who has what bias on what, you know. It's especially like you mentioned George Floyd and the, you know, the Summer of Love, as what it was called, with the reporting there, like, oh, you know, there are buildings burning behind reporters and they're in gas masks saying, well, you know, it is fiery, but it's mostly peaceful, and as buildings are being torched behind them and looting.
Yeah.
So it's amazing, and I am not afraid to speak out against Black Lives Matter, the organization itself. To me, I label it as a domestic terror organization. However, I'm not saying that every single person that might wear a Black Lives Matter t-shirt or hold a Black Lives Matter sign is a domestic terrorist. No. I'm talking about how the organization started and how it runs and how it operates, because I understand to a degree that there are people out there, good people, that are protesting about Black Lives Matter. But then you have like the people that are using this as an excuse to either loot and terrorize neighborhoods and assault. And, you know, sometimes, you know, worse than assault, kill and just cause that destruction. You know what I mean? Like there's
I happened in my neighborhood. So I lived near downtown Knoxville. And last summer, after the death of George Floyd, we had people marching down our streets, shooting fireworks off at houses, including my house. My roommate got his car windows and mirrors bashed in, and they just marched down the street, not giving a damn what they left in their path. Oh, I've seen it front and center. Yeah.
In my neighborhood, and I'm where I am in New York on Long Island in the suburbs, you know, we have diverse communities, but where I am, it's predominantly a white community. And we've had several Black Lives Matter protests in my neighborhood with walking distance to my house. But what's interesting here is the Black Lives Matter protests in my neighborhood are predominantly attended by middle-aged to younger white liberals, and not many black people are among the protesters. There are some, but there are actually more white, say, millennial type liberals at these protests. And there was one instance where they started by the train station, which is right near my house, and they decided they're going to march around residential streets, which they did, with the police, who they hate, protecting them. They were looking at houses that had American flags on their porches, and they would stand in front of it with bullhorns screaming to rip their flags down. And there was a woman, a white woman, screaming at these people, "Take your flags down. We want your children. We want your babies." Imagine that. These people are paying $20,000 in property taxes, because it's not cheap tax-wise where I live. And they have these idiots in front of their house at the sidewalk screaming at them to take their flags down. They want their kids, and that all cops should be dead cops. This is, and it's from white liberals with their Black Lives Matter signs.
Yeah, and I mean, if you go on the Black Lives Matter organization website, they have their list of seven demands, and one of those demands is straight up defund the police. I mean, it's exactly what they want. They also want to call for tearing down of kind of your typical American family, because they don't believe in family values at all.
No, they're against the nuclear family. They believe in that. No,
that is
community.
Exactly the word I was looking for. When you talk about how you refer to Black Lives Matter as a domestic terrorist group, I've had to take, I call it the Ben Shapiro approach, honestly, of any time I engage in conversation about Black Lives Matter with someone, I have to stipulate, okay, what are we talking about? Before we can even launch into this conversation, are we talking about the organization? Are we talking about the movement? Or are we just talking about the simple phrase Black Lives Matter? Because if that's all we're talking about is the phrase, then I agree with you. And so does basically everybody else. Unless you're a KKK member, you agree that Black Lives Matter. Now, if you want to talk about something else, then we can engage in debate, whether it's the organization or the movement. But if you just want to talk about the phrase, I agree. And I always have to do that to kind of keep them from playing this semantic game of, as soon as I start to disagree, they say, well, oh, you just hate black people. Oh, you just want black people to die. And of course, I don't believe that at all. It's a semantic game, and it's what the left does on an everyday basis.
And, you know, it's interesting, not only right now in the political climate, but you don't only have to disagree with, say, Black Lives Matter, the movement, or what they do. At this point, you can disagree with something as stupid as climate change and be told you're a racist by someone on the left.
Climate change, student debt, yeah.
Everything. Like, I have this conversation about student debt where, well, I'm inundated in hundreds of thousands of student debt because of the school, and it's going to take me forever to pay that off and to get where I need to be. Well, yeah, that's how it is. You took the loans out for that education. Do I think education is completely overpriced, higher education? Absolutely, 100%. And if they want to do some type of reform on that, you know, I'm all for it. But I am 100% against any type of student loan debt. That's loans you took on. There are people that are lucky enough to get scholarships and get free rides and things like that. And then someone will say, oh, well, they're just privileged. Well, that's bullshit, too, because how many black kids have earned that as well in sports or music or academic scholarships? So that's not an argument, in my opinion. And if you're I know physicians who went to medical school, got a job in a hospital, and they didn't really start making money until like year four or five, when they could at least either wipe their debt away or pay most of it off. So that whole, but if I say I'm against the student debt, well, you know, just eliminating it, get forgiveness of it, like it didn't even exist, then I'm either a racist, or most of the time it's a race. Well, you're a racist because that, and I can't fathom I don't even know what racist means anymore. That's how confusing it's become. What does racist, what does being a racist mean today? Because I don't know.
So racism today, everything is more attributable to what we are told is systemic racism. And of course, systemic racism, it comes through your critical race theory, your Stokely Carmichaels of the world. And essentially, systemic racism stemmed from, well, racism is completely outlawed in the United States now in the mid-1960s. And so we are quickly running out of things that we can point to and say that is blatantly racist. So you then had people start to come up with this, literally invent the phrase systemic racism in the early 1970s, which basically meant there's nothing that we can point to and say that is explicitly racist. Therefore, we have to invent the term systemic racism, because then whenever we say systemic racism, then we can make it attributable to anything and everything we want. And we don't have to have any real evidence to that thing being racist. We can just say, oh, it's systemically racist. And if you disagree, then you are part of the system. Basically, they created a ghost. And if you deny the ghost, then you are the ghost. That is what has happened.
And I hate that term systemic racism, because I think it's such a nonsense term. We know that racism exists and will always exist. White supremacy is not a threat in America. It is not a systemic problem in America. And then, of course, when I say that, I'm called a bigger racist.
Yep.
But then I say, well, you know, our president, or whatever you want to call him, and vice president, When they turn around and say that the biggest threat to our country is domestic terrorism rooted in white supremacy, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard come out of, one of the stupidest things I've ever heard come out of a president's mouth. First of all, if that were true, And this country was rooted in white supremacy, and they were hood wearing redneck white supremacists all over, if that were true, there would be bloodbaths in the street during every single one of these Black Lives Matter riot, burn the city down events.
Correct.
There's no doubt about it. White supremacists, domestic terrorists or white supremacists would be there doing domestic terrorism deeds and killing Black people in the street for trying to destroy communities. And I'm happy that didn't happen, but it didn't happen because white supremacy is not an issue. Again, that is a ghost that was made up by the left and told as a scary story around a campfire that unfortunately too many people are believing.
Now they've started using January 6th as their fundamental for everything. Everything white supremacy goes back to January 6th, even though there's absolutely not a shred of evidence that suggests that race was involved in what happened on January 6th in the slightest bit. But the argument is always, well, if they would have been Black on January 6th, rioting at the Capitol, they all would have been shot dead. You saw this nonsense pushed by Kamala Harris. You saw it pushed by Ibram X. Kennedy. You saw it littered around the left. And my response to that, when I first saw the take that, well, everything would have been so different on January 6th had they been Black, my response was, you know what? I agree with you. If they would have been Black, it would have been different, but not the different that you think it's going to be. The difference that you think it is that you think they would have all been shot dead. Right. I think if everyone on January 6th would have been Black, then January 6th wouldn't have just been January 6th. It would have been January 6th, and then January 7th, and then January 8th, and 9th, and 10th, and 11th, and 12th, and so on and so forth. And my basis for that argument is what we saw happen all last summer, including 100 straight days plus of riots in Portland, Oregon. I mean, it's an absurd argument on its face.
Not only that, If January 6th, if all those people were Black, then the FBI wouldn't be hunting them like Jews in Poland to arrest them and hold them in jail for trespassing and impeding an official, event at the Capitol. I just did an episode on this. Was it yesterday? About the January 6th commission. And I think they arrested like 494 people.
Okay, 432 was the last number I saw. So that's updated, yeah.
I thought it was as of yesterday, the day before it was 494. Well, over 400 people arrested.
My number's from last Thursday, so you're definitely more up to date than I am.
And they're still hunting people. They're still hunting people, asking for information to rat people out. People are ratting out friends, families, boyfriends, girlfriends, husbands, wives, whatever. But here's the thing. They keep calling it an insurrection from like the next day, from the leftists to the mainstream media to still Democrats. It's an insurrection. If it was an insurrection, why has no one been charged with insurrection? No one has been charged with insurrection. No one has been charged with treason. Nobody has been charged with anything from that U.S. code. I think it was, I don't know, maybe 18 chapter 115 or whatever it was. I don't remember it off the top of my head. They were all charged with violent entry, trespassing, being inside the unlawful occupying of a government building, and in impeding I forget the word of it, but nothing as far as insurrection or anything to do with overthrowing the United States government. So I can't stomach that they're still calling this an insurrection. And people will say to me, well, all those people were arrested for insurrection. No, they weren't. And then there's actually a link. I forget which news I tell people, get on the Google machine and look up the charges for the Capitol. And you can see they list the name, the state they're from, and the exact federal charge for that individual person. And they're all basically the same. There's one or two slight differences. Maybe somebody had a club in their bag and they have a weapons charge. Nothing about insurrection.
So I really like that. I have not taken that approach of looking at the actual charges to see whether or not I thought it was an insurrection. So I honestly really like that perspective. The angle I took on it, which you might not like at first, but once I build on it, I think you'll like it, was I just wanted to go maybe not to the legal definition, but to the everyday average person definition of an insurrection to see if what we are using in everyday conversation fits the bill. So the Merriam-Webster definition of an insurrection is an act or instance of revolting against civil authority or an established government. And so based on that definition, whenever I look at what happened on January 6th, I'm okay sitting back and saying, you know what, I would consider that an insurrection. But if we are going to call that an insurrection, then we also must call what we saw all summer long last summer from Black Lives Matter an insurrection as well, because that was also a violent uprising against the authority of the government, against the authority of the police. It was exactly the definition of an insurrection. So if you want to call January 6th an insurrection, that's fine. I can get with you on that. But you've also got to be willing to call what we saw last summer an insurrection as well. And what I found is there is nobody willing to make that compromise with me.
No, and I get it. As soon as you built on it, I understand that's the definition of an insurrection. Right. So again, back to the summer of love, when they're trying to burn down federal courthouses, when they're taking over police precincts, which I find unbelievable, because I can't imagine getting a 200 people and going to my local police precinct and forcing those police officers out and being able to get away with it. But taking over police stations, taking over parts of cities, and it, like you said, they're fighting civil authority. You'd have to call that an insurrection. You'd have to call that domestic terrorism. It's still happening as we sit here and talk. It's still happening in parts of the country, and it's cost over $2 billion in property damage. Like, that's a legit number, $2 billion in property damage, lives lost, people hurt, businesses destroyed. Black businesses destroyed. But again, nobody wants to have that conversation. And like you said, if they were all black people on January 6th, yes, it would keep happening. If maybe it would have been black people if Donald Trump was reelected. Maybe it would have been. I don't know. I completely condemn everything that happened on January 6th.
As do I.
All of those people are going to, face justice. I happen to know a few people that were there, complete idiots that I've had some dealings with throughout my life, old friends, maybe not friends anymore, acquaintances, who all have been arrested. And I haven't talked to them about it because I don't want to speak to them. I haven't spoken to them in years. But then we also have the problem with, like, the Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, when still to this day, when we know unequivocally it's 100% false, he was not murdered by red MAGA hat wearing Trump supporters. He was not beaten in the head with a fire extinguisher to death. We know through the medical examiner's records that he passed away a day or two later from not one, but two strokes specifically, and he had spoken to his brother. We also know other people died of natural causes. There was one murder that day. One murder.
Ashley Babbitt.
And it was exactly. And again, she was wrong for being there. She should not have been there, but she wasn't armed, and the video was clear. She was shot dead, and it was all swept under the rug. And we don't even know who the federal officer was that shot her. They haven't officially released his name. You hear rumors, but it was officially said that there's going to be no charges or the investigation's over. That's being swept under the rug. And if they go ahead and have this January 6th commission, which I don't think they're going through, I don't think they're going to get the votes in the Senate. I almost want them to, because I would love, even though if they do, it's not going to be bipartisan. I would love for them to bring in the sergeant at arms of that day and Nancy Pelosi under oath and ask them some really tough questions to see the about the intelligence that they had of a possible threat and how the sergeant at arms did not accept National Guard support. And he answers to the Speaker of the House. There's a lot of unanswered questions other than the events, like what happened and going after Donald Trump and Republicans. I think a lot has to be answered for as far as Nancy Pelosi and the people who are running things at the Capitol.
I agree. I think the way I've approached this is, what would the net effect of having a Capitol insurrection commission be? And I genuinely believe the effect would be essentially nothing. And when the effect, because it's a federal government commission, the federal government does nothing well. So essentially what it would be doing is it would be pissing away mine and your tax dollars at the end of the day. Because what we've seen is, like we already pointed out, justice has been served to almost 500 Americans, with the Department of Justice promises many more to come. So we've got justice being served to many people. We've already seen people from the Department of Defense, the FBI, the Capitol Police called in front of Congress to testify. Anything that we are going to know about January 6th that people are going to say, we already know. So if you want to form a commission off of it, basically what you're going to do is you're not going to find anything new. No more people are going to be arrested than have already been arrested for it. And in the meantime, you're going to piss away my tax dollars, which, I mean, you're the federal government. You tend to be very good at. But anytime I can say, I don't want you to do that, I'm going to say, I don't want you to do that. So I don't oppose the January 6th commission because I support what happened on January 6th. I oppose the January 6th commission because I know the net effect is going to be a great big zero, and I'm going to lose money in the process.
Absolutely, 100%. And not only that, the real reason the Democrats want to push the January 6th commission is so that they have an opportunity. I believe somebody even called it, impeachment 3.0. where they want the opportunity for more political theater and more face time on TV so that they can attempt to tarnish, damage, and destroy their political opponents, like firebrand Republicans, other Republicans that are trying to turn seats blue in the House and the Senate. Donald Trump himself, the orange boogeyman that lives rent-free in these sick morons' heads that they can't seem to let go. That's all it's for. Political theater. And I just said, political theater is a fancy term for dramatic bullshit, because that's exactly what it is. And that's they want to spend our taxpayer money to have a reality show in Congress chambers to tell another chance to tell more people how bad and how racist all Republicans are, and that we are all insurrectionist white supremacists. That's the only reason they want to have this January 6th commission.
Yeah, and I think they want to drag out January 6th as long as they can. The Democrats know that the majority of Americans don't like January 6th. So they also know that the longer they drag that out, the more they can just basically put a stain on Republicans. So they want to drag January 6th all the way to the 2022 elections. That's the goal here. Because the more they can promote January 6th, the more they can promote that Republicans are the evil ones that promote what happened on January 6th, and then they can go and win in 2022. Because they know that right now, many Americans are rejecting their policies. We're already seeing with the April jobs report the downside of the horrendous economic policies being put forward by the Biden administration and then passed in Congress right now. And the American people are not going to be down for that in 2022 whenever we still have a stagflation style economy. So what they've got to do is they've got to promote the fear. They've got to create the dramatic bullshit, if you will, and promote the fear so that way they can win in 2022. It's all politics. I'm not saying the left is the only side that plays politics. But in terms of what we're seeing with January 6th, yeah, they are playing politics. That's it.
Absolutely. And the right has their own way of playing politics. But the Democrats are crunching because, you know, the midterms are going to be here soon. And Democrats, in my opinion, are known for, they're famous for, because they're scared of, when they're scared of their opponents, they will do anything they can to try to destroy them because they know they can't win on their merit and policies alone because their policies always suck. Obviously, that's for interpretation. I'm a little biased, obviously. But the track records are there. They have to spit venom. They have to attack. They'll even attack each other if they have to. But the thing about Democrats, and I had said this on one of my shows, the Democrats are as sick as they are, especially these progressives like AOC and her whole ridiculous jihad squad. Democrats will eat their own young if they have to, but the next day will co-sponsor bills as long as it's something they can get agree on to screw Republicans and Republican voters. And as far as leadership goes in the Democratic Party, and this is why I was happy to see Liz Cheney go, the Democratic leadership, Chuck Schumer and, Nancy, they listen to the sick progressives in their party. And they tend now to roll with what those sick progressives want. I mean, look at Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer, who called himself the guardian of Israel for years, did not get up in front of his podium and stand in support of Israel. And he did not do that because AOC, he's afraid of AOC because AOC is probably going to primary him this in the midterms because he's up. And he's afraid of that because if AOC primaries Chuck Schumer, AOC's got a good shot of beating that old man and becoming the next state senator. And maybe even becoming a majority leader if she can play her cards right, even though she's brand new. I mean, do I believe that she runs the Democratic Party? No. Do I believe she has a lot of influence on certain people? She does, because they see her following. And when you have Chuck Schumer running scared, he's going to play that game. But the Republican leadership is very weak, meaning there are firebrand, we call them firebrand Republicans out there. Like, and you have your Matt Gaetz, and who's very aggressive and talking. You know, you have even that the other new one, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Bobbitt from Colorado. I always say her name wrong. There's a few of them who stand up for free speech, the Second Amendment right, and they're very outspoken. But you're not seeing the leadership. You're not seeing the leadership take their lead. You know, you're not seeing the leadership take their lead and listen to them like the Democrat leadership listened to their sick progressives. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sorry about that. I had somebody walk in the studio. But yeah, no, I do think that the Republicans have better leadership than they're given credit for. I know a lot of your Trumpian Republicans really don't like people like Mitch McConnell, people like, Kevin McCarthy, even though Kevin McCarthy, he's really come around. Same with people like Rand Paul. I do think we're seeing a lot of Republicans standing on their values right now. In terms of what you were saying about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez potentially primarying Schumer, I mean, you're in New York. You've got the front row seat. That's something I've not even thought of that as a possibility yet. But now that you say it, I mean, it sounds legit. But yes, you're right in that I think we're seeing the left bend the knee to the far left every single day. And we see the squad growing with Cory Bush just getting elected to Congress out of the St. Louis area. Jamal Bowen. Also, we just saw St. Louis elect Letitia Jones as their new mayor. And Jones has already announced that she wants to cut $4 million of funding from the policing. We are seeing the radical progressive wing of the Democratic Party grow and grow and grow. The Democrats see that as well. And that's why they're willing to bend the knee to them.
So where do you see the future of the GOP going? Like, what's your take on the future of the Republican Party right now with, as we sit here, with Donald Trump, say, being the unofficial leader of the GOP? I mean, you probably could call him the official leader of the GOP at this point. What's the future of the Republican Party right now? What do you think?
So I think, and a lot of your listeners won't like this, I think the Republican Party does need to move on from Donald Trump. Not Donald Trump's policies, because I think Donald Trump's policies were some of the best we've seen since Reagan, and that's a very popular opinion. But what we know about Donald Trump, for all of, don't wrong, I like Donald Trump personally. Mm-hmm. I don't love Donald Trump. I don't love any politicians, but I like Donald Trump. But one thing that we know about Donald Trump, Republicans love to say he brought more Republicans to the polls than ever before. And I get that, but Donald Trump also brings more Democrats to the polls than ever before. When Donald Trump is in the race, he drives Democrats to the polls. And we saw that as evidence in the last election cycle. I think the future of the Republican Party is Ron DeSantis as a presidential candidate. I know a lot of people want Trump DeSantis 2024. And you know what? If I have to take that ticket, I will take that ticket. I would rather see DeSantis as a top of the ticket candidate. Reason being is because his policies are very Trumpian. And like I said, I like the Trump policies, but he's a more articulate voice than Donald Trump to promote those policies. Similar to, I know Mike Pence has been kind of blackballed from the Republican Party, but Mike Pence, as the vice president, as part of my job, I would watch Mike Pence virtually every time he spoke. And Mike Pence was the best defender of the Trump campaign of anybody out there because he could articulate well what the Trump campaign was trying to do. So I view Ron DeSantis in a similar light, and that when DeSantis speaks, he will say the same thing Trump will say, but in an instance where Trump would be like, and it's going to be very big, it's going to be huge, it's going to be massive. Ron DeSantis will take out the paper, say, and this is exactly what we've seen. He will give you the data. He will give you the data of what they expect. And this is why we want to approach this issue from this perspective. So I think the Republican Party needs a more articulate version of Donald Trump. So that's when I say move on from Donald Trump, I mean move on from the Donald Trump personality, maybe not the Donald Trump policy.
So I agree with most of what you said, and I also agree with, all right, and this is where a lot of people, friends of mine, listeners, supporters, people have to learn, all right, Donald Trump, the man, again, great policies. I loved Donald Trump's policies. The America First agenda is what everybody's calling it.
Yep.
And he's fighting for that, and he truly loves this country. The man himself, he's going to be 75 next month. I only know that because my birthday's in June also. So, Geminis, Donald Trump. Do I want to see him on the ticket as president? Part of me, yes, because I'd like to see him do his 8 years. However, if and like you said, if it's a Trump-DeSantis ticket, I'd be more than happy with that. If it was a DeSantis and whoever else ticket, as long as it's a good name, yes, of course, I'm going to be happy with that. They have to pull the policies away from the man, Donald Trump. Donald Trump's always going to be there in the background. He's doing tons of fundraising. He is the leader of the GOP, whether people like it or not. He will stay the leader of the GOP until he decides he does not want to be leader of the GOP.
I'm with you.
His daughter may run for Senate. I don't think you're going to see Don Jr. run for anything. He's been saying recently he likes the background. If you run for something and get elected, then you have to do the job, and he's not really interested in that. And but you know, the Democratic Party, they have that sicko, the George Soros, okay? If Donald Trump, which I feel like he's in that position right now on the GOP side, if he stayed in that, like the George Soros of the Republican Party, and was able to raise the money for the PACs and endorse certain candidates and not run for president, yeah, I would be more than okay with that. To not act, and Ron DeSantis is, to me, Ron DeSantis is the front runner to be the presidential candidate and to see who maybe the VP would be. Obviously, you know, everyone can speculate. I do feel that Donald Trump is probably going to run for president again. More so, ego.
I think he will too. Here's what I would like to see from Donald Trump, and I can probably win some of your audience back that I lost whenever I said,
I don't think you lost anybody.
Donald Trump. If Donald Trump runs again, I want to see the Donald Trump that we saw in his farewell speech. He did the 20-minute farewell speech from the White House the day before he left office. And I did an episode of my show where I literally just said, this is the best speech Donald Trump has ever given. I'm going to play you the speech, and then the episode's over. I just want you to sit on it and let it mellow. And the reason it was his best speech, and I had this same conversation with tons of people here at the radio station that like Donald Trump and that don't like Donald Trump, that said, damn, if he would have spoken like that for the last year, he would be president again. Because Donald Trump, he was clearly disappointed. So he was not his flamboyant, flailing self. He was more seated back. Once again, eloquently saying, here's everything we accomplished in my 4 years. And he goes down the laundry list, and it's incredible what he's able to do for 4 years. If Donald Trump comes back and is that Donald Trump in the public sphere, he should be able to win any election he wants to win, because that doesn't turn people away. What turns people away is the personality. And look, I don't vote on politicians based on personality, but millions of Americans do. If we can get farewell speech Donald Trump in the public sphere, which honestly, he was kind of like that today on his interview with Dan Bongino. He did about 15 minutes with Dan Bongino at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Yeah. I think that is a winning Donald Trump.
Well, I guess, you know, we're gonna find out what happens. I think after I believe they said that they have probably going to wait till either just before the midterms or after the midterms, or maybe we'll see a decision. We'll see what the future holds for the Republican Party. I tell people, just don't sit on their asses to get involved, even in local elections. We didn't even really get into it. Maybe we'll do another show together in the future. We'll talk about that critical race theory thing, because by me, the Board of Education races are some of them were based on critical race theory. One school district near me voted out 3 incumbents because they were bringing critical race theory into the school, and they were voted out just this week. And 3 new people, who conservatives who were against critical race theory and poisoning our children, won the election in record polling numbers. So I tell everybody it's very important to get involved in your local politics. I want to you to tell everybody where they can find your podcast, where they can listen to you before we wrap up. Where can everybody find you and your show?
Yeah, for sure. So the show is called Combating the Madness. It's on it's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, so you can go find it there. Literally just search Combating the Madness. It's a little picture of me, a little microphone, and it says Combating the Madness, a conservative podcast. So you can click on that, subscribe, and follow that. We're on Instagram at Combat the Mad. We're on Twitter at Combat the Mad. Relatively active on both of those. I'm not huge on Facebook. I need to, but I'm not yet. And I won't go too much into it, but yeah, there's some really big things potentially on the horizon for the show. Maybe becoming a radio show one day, getting a late night spot, so then it'll be a daily show. Maybe we're in some talks with some other people, and maybe some big things happening. I'm excited for the future, that's for sure.
Awesome. And we have to, people like you and me, we start out as conservative podcasts and grow. I'm actually in talks with some people that are trying to make deals with becoming some right-leaning news stations. People like us hopefully will have our shows and be able to get conservative values out to other people and preserve them. It's important because we keep getting censored. Like I told you before the show, Facebook put me in jail for 30 days again after they unpublished my Facebook page, The Great Divide Podcast, and then put it back up and put me in jail for 30 days. So who knows where they'll allow us to be tomorrow. And that's that. These conservative podcasts are important, and conservative radio shows.
Yeah, and one more thing. I know you're trying to wrap up, but you mentioned people like us promoting conservative values. I think that's an area that the Republican Party and people like you and I who do shows like this, people like a Dan Bongino, people like a Mark Levin, a Sean Hannity, can really, there's so much room for improvement there. And I don't want to say this as a criticism. I want to say this as this is an opportunity to promote the conservative agenda. And that's that I think Republicans right now don't do a good enough job of promoting conservative values. I think really people like us on the right, and I fall victim to it on my show. It's entertaining. It's what drives listens. Is the show's predicated on bashing stupid stuff on the left. I mean, my show, we do a countdown of the 5 wokest takes of the week, and then I destroy them with data and logic. I mean, that's the core of my show. But I do believe there's so much opportunity to promote the conservative values of, look, at the very heart of conservatism is individual liberty. The fact that I believe in you and you believe in me as people to do what we want and to make our own decisions. And I think that value alone is such a winning value that Americans and people in general can get behind. I don't think right now we do the best job promoting that value, but I think that, along with conservative values of free markets, free religion, all of that, I think that is such a marketing opportunity for people on the right to promote how positive for everyone conservatism can be.
Well, I can't even add to that because that was so greatly put. And I agree with it 100%. Big government sucks. Less regulation, lower taxes, capitalism, free market, free speech, guns, freedom. I love it all. Alex, it's like people like us, we just have to keep it going. And I think it's great. And everyone out there, listen, go check out Combating the Madness, Alex Abernathy. If you're in Tennessee, look him up. What are you, News Talk 98.7, correct?
Yep, News Talk 98.7 WOKI.
All right, so check him out there. He reads the news now at the top of the hour of the Dan Bongino show. He's another great show. If you want to catch up on the episodes here, just go to the website, thegreatdivide1776.com. All the social media is there, the YouTube channel, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that. Alex, thank you so much for being here. It was great. Awesome conversation, awesome show. I hope maybe we could do it again in the future. I really appreciate you you taking the time.
100%. I'll have you on the show sometime as well.
Absolutely. I'd love to. All right, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Take care of your family, most of all. God bless America. You take care. You can reach out to me with opinions and ideas for other episodes at TheGreatDivide1776@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media at The Great Divide Podcast. And please be sure to leave a review for this podcast so the show can be shared to other listeners. Thank you, and God bless America.